Evolution, myths and facts. Evolution is as much a fact as the heat of the sun, asserts Professor Richard Dawkins, a prominent evolutionary scientist. Of course, experiments and direct observations prove that the sun is hot. But do experiments and direct observations provide the teaching of evolution with the same undisputed support? Before answering that question, we need to clear up something. Many scientists have noted that over time, the descendants of living things may change slightly. For example, humans can selectively breed dogs so that eventually the descendants have shorter legs or longer hair than their forebears. The footnote reads, "The changes dog breeders can produce often result from losses in gene function. For example, the dachshund's small size is caused by a failure of normal development of cartilage, resulting in dwarfism." End of footnote. Some scientists attach to such slight changes the term microevolution. However, evolutionists teach that small changes accumulated slowly over billions of years and produce the big changes needed to make fish into amphibians and ape-like creatures into men. These proposed big changes are defined as macroevolution. Charles Darwin, for example, taught that the small changes we can observe implied that much bigger changes, which no one has observed, are also possible. He felt that over vast periods of time, some original, so-called simple life forms slowly evolved by means of extremely slight modifications into the millions of different forms of life on Earth. To many, this claim sounds reasonable. They wonder, if small changes can occur within a species, why should not evolution produce big changes over long periods of time? The footnote reads, "While the word species is used frequently in this section, it should be noted that this term is not found in the Bible book of Genesis. There we find the term kind, which is much broader in meaning. Often what scientists choose to call the evolution of a new species is simply a matter of variation within a kind, as the word is used in the Genesis account." End of footnote. In reality, though, the teaching of evolution rests on three myths. Consider the following. Myth 1. Mutations provide the raw materials needed to create new species. The teaching of macroevolution is built on the claim that mutations, random changes in the genetic code of plants and animals, can produce not only new species, but also entirely new families of plants and animals. The facts. Many characteristics of a plant or an animal are determined by the instructions contained in its genetic code, the blueprints that are wrapped up in the nucleus of each cell. The footnote reads, "Research shows that the cell's cytoplasm, its membranes, and other structures also play a role in shaping an organism." End of footnote. Researchers have discovered that mutations can produce alterations in the descendants of plants and animals. But do mutations really produce entirely new species? What has a century of study in the field of genetic research revealed? In the late 1930s, scientists enthusiastically embraced a new idea. They already thought that natural selection, the process in which the organism best suited to its environment is most likely to survive and breed, could produce new species of plants from random mutations. Therefore, they now assumed that artificial or human-guided selection of mutations should be able to do the same thing, but more efficiently. Euphoria spread among biologists in general and geneticists and breeders in particular, said Wolf Eckhart Lerning, a scientist from the Max Planck Institute for Plant Breeding Research in Germany. The footnote reads, "Lerning believes that life was created. His comments in this publication are his own and do not represent the opinion of the Max Planck Institute for Plant Breeding Research. End of footnote. Why the euphoria? Lernig, who has spent some 30 years studying mutation genetics in plants, said, "These researchers thought that the time had come to revolutionize the traditional method of breeding plants and animals. They thought that by inducing and selecting favorable mutations, they could produce new and better plants and animals. In fact, some hoped to produce entirely new species." Scientists in the United States, Asia, and Europe launched well-funded research programs using methods that promised to speed up evolution. After more than 40 years of intensive research, what were the results? In spite of an enormous financial expenditure, says researcher Peter von Sengbusch, the attempt to cultivate increasingly productive varieties by irradiation to cause mutations widely proved to be a failure. And Lernig said, by the 1980s, the hopes and euphoria among scientists had ended in worldwide failure. Mutation breeding as a separate branch of research was abandoned in Western countries. Almost all the mutants died or were weaker than wild varieties. The footnote reads, mutation experiments repeatedly found that the number of new mutants steadily declined, while the same type of mutants regularly appeared. In addition, less than 1% of plant mutations were chosen for further research, and less than 1% of this group were found suitable for commercial use. However, not one entirely new species was ever created. The results of mutation breeding in animals were even worse than in plants, and the method was abandoned entirely. End of footnote. Even so, the data now gathered from some 100 years of mutation research in general and 70 years of mutation breeding in particular enable scientists to draw conclusions regarding the ability of mutations to produce new species. After examining the evidence, Lernig concluded, "Mutations cannot transform an original species of plant or animal into an entirely new one." This conclusion agrees with all the experiences and results of mutation research of the 20th century taken together, as well as with the laws of probability. So, can mutations cause one species to evolve into a completely new kind of creature? The evidence answers no. Lernig's research has led him to the conclusion that properly defined species have real boundaries that cannot be abolished or transgressed by accidental mutations. Consider the implications of the above facts. If highly trained scientists are unable to produce new species by artificially inducing and selecting favorable mutations, is it likely that an unintelligent process would do a better job? If research shows that mutations cannot transform an original species into an entirely new one, then how exactly was macroevolution supposed to have taken place? Myth 2. Natural selection led to the creation of new species. Darwin believed that what he called natural selection would favour those life forms best suited to the environment, whereas less suitable life forms would eventually die off. Modern evolutionists teach that as species spread and became isolated, natural selection chose the ones with gene mutations that made them capable of surviving in their new environment. As a result, evolutionists speculate, these isolated groups eventually developed into totally new species. The facts. As previously noted, the evidence from research strongly indicates that mutations cannot produce entirely new kinds of plants or animals. Nevertheless, what proof do evolutionists provide to support the claim that natural selection chooses beneficial mutations to produce new species? A brochure published in 1999 by the National Academy of Sciences, or NAS, in the United States refers to the 13 species of finches studied by Darwin on the Galapagos Islands, now known as Darwin's finches. In the 1970s, a research group led by Peter R. and B. Rosemary Grant of Princeton University began studying these finches and discovered that after a year of drought on the islands, finches that had slightly bigger beaks survived more readily than those with smaller beaks. Since observing the size and shape of the beaks is one of the primary ways of determining the 13 species of finches, these findings were assumed to be significant. The Grants have estimated, continues the NAS brochure, that if droughts occur about once every 10 years on the islands, a new species of finch might arise in only about 200 years. However, the NAS brochure neglects to mention that in the years following the drought, finches with smaller beaks again dominated the population. The researchers found that as the climatic conditions on the island changed, finches with longer beaks were dominant 1 year, but later those with smaller beaks were dominant. They also noticed that some of the different species of finches were interbreeding and producing offspring that survived better than the parents. They concluded that if the interbreeding continued, it could result in the fusion of two species into just one. So, does natural selection really create entirely new species? Decades ago, evolutionary biologist George Christopher Williams began questioning whether natural selection had such power. In 1999, evolutionary theorist Jeffrey H. Schwartz wrote that natural selection may be helping species adapt to the changing demands of existence, but it is not creating anything new. Indeed, Darwin's finches are not becoming anything new. They are still finches. And the fact that they are interbreeding casts doubt on the methods some evolutionists use to define a species. In addition, information about these birds exposes the fact that even prestigious scientific academies are not above reporting evidence in a biased manner. Myth 3. The fossil record documents macroevolutionary changes. The previously mentioned NAS brochure leaves the reader with the impression that the fossils found by scientists more than adequately document macroevolution. It declares, "So many intermediate forms have been discovered between fish and amphibians, between amphibians and reptiles, between reptiles and mammals, and along the primate lines of descent, that it often is difficult to identify categorically when the transition occurs from one to another particular species." The facts. The confidence statement made by the NAS brochure is quite surprising. Why? Niles Eldredge, a staunch evolutionist, states that the fossil record shows not that there is a gradual accumulation of change, but that for long periods of time, little or no evolutionary change accumulates in most species. The footnote reads, "Even the few examples from the fossil record that researchers point to as proof of evolution are open to debate. See pages 22 to 29 of the brochure, The Origin of Life, Five Questions Worth Asking, published by Jehovah's Witnesses." End of footnote. To date, scientists worldwide have unearthed and catalogued some 200 million large fossils and billions of small fossils. Many researchers agree that this vast and detailed record shows that all the major groups of animals appeared suddenly and remained virtually unchanged, with many species disappearing as suddenly as they arrived. Belief in evolution, an act of faith. Why do many prominent evolutionists insist that macroevolution is a fact? Richard Lewontin, an influential evolutionist, candidly wrote that many scientists are willing to accept unproven scientific claims because they have a prior commitment, a commitment to materialism. The footnote reads, "Materialism, in this sense, refers to a theory that everything in the universe, including all life, came into existence without any supernatural intervention in the process. End of footnote. Many scientists refuse even to consider the possibility of an intelligent designer because, as Lewontin writes, we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. In this regard, sociologist Rodney Stark is quoted in Scientific American as saying, "There's been 200 years of marketing that if you want to be a scientific person, you've got to keep your mind free of the fetters of religion." He further notes that in research universities, the religious people keep their mouths shut. If you are to accept the teaching of macroevolution as true, you must believe that agnostic or atheistic scientists will not let their personal beliefs influence their interpretations of scientific findings. You must believe that mutations and natural selection produced all complex life forms, despite a century of research that shows that mutations have not transformed even one properly defined species into something entirely new. You must believe that all creatures gradually evolved from a common ancestor, despite a fossil record that strongly indicates that the major kinds of plants and animals appeared abruptly and did not evolve into other kinds, even over eons of time. Does that type of belief sound as though it is based on facts or on myths? Really, belief in evolution is an act of faith.
The following is supplementary information. How would you reply? How would you respond to the claim that proof of so-called microevolution is evidence that macroevolution must have taken place? Why is it significant that the fossil record shows that the majority of species changed very little over vast periods of time?